This is tape one, side one, of an interview with Professor Robert Byron Byrd in his office at the University of Wisconsin-Madison on October 1, 1998. The interviewer is James G. Cranham. Professor Byrd, I know from things I've read that you were born in Texas in 1924. For the record here, can you give me your exact birth date and tell me something about your early childhood?
Well, I was born on the 5th of February of 1924 in Bryan, Texas, where my father was a professor of civil engineering at Texas A&M University. And about a year later, we moved back to, the family moved back to Iowa, where my father had grown up, and where he had been born on a farm near Fort Dodge.
How long were you in Iowa?
You think this is going to work out all right now?
We'll try.
Well, let's see. We were there for about 4 years, and then we went to Memphis, Tennessee for a year. Then we came back to Fort Dodge, and then we went to Washington, D.C. for a year, and we came back to Fort Dodge again until 1936. And at that point, we moved to Washington, D.C., and I went to high school in Washington, D.C.
What took your father to Washington, D.C. at that time?
Well, he was a civil engineer, and he was working in the field of flood control and water treatment. And he got a very good job with the Corps of Engineers in Washington, and had a very successful and productive career there as a civil engineer.
What do you remember of your high school years in Washington, D.C.?
Oh, they're very wonderful memories. I went to a very fine high school there in downtown Washington, and I think the level of instruction was extremely good there.
Did your interest in engineering start there?
Not really. When I got ready to go to college, I wanted to major either in foreign languages or music. But my father didn't think that that was a very wise idea. He was afraid I wouldn't be able to earn a living that way. So he said, you're going to take engineering.
What foreign languages were you particularly interested in at that time?
Well, I had had 5 years of Latin and 2 years of French, and I had studied German on my own on the bus ride back and forth to school, and I'd also studied some Anglo-Saxon on my own.
Do you have any recollection of what prompted your intense interest in foreign language at that time?
I think it was because the teachers I had in foreign languages were exceptionally good.
That was in Washington, D.C.?
In Washington, D.C.
Your music interest, when did that develop?
Oh, I started piano lessons in Iowa when I was about 7 years old. And here again, I had a very fine music teacher in Fort Dodge, Iowa, and an excellent music teacher in Washington, D.C.
What particular expression of music do you find you have most talent for?
Well, my interests are mainly in classical music, and I do some composing now because my finger dexterity isn't what it used to be.
Were you primarily a pianist then, or?
Later I took pipe organ as well.
You graduated from high school in Washington, D.C., and what did you do then?
I went to the University of Maryland as a major in chemical engineering.
So your father's influence was dominant on your choice at the time you went to college?
It was his choice.
Well, how did you find it once you were enrolled there?
Oh, I did just fine. I enjoyed it. I think I always enjoyed going to school anyway, and so I did okay.
What do you particularly remember about your college days with your new major in chemical engineering?
Well, I started college in 41, and of course in December of that year the Japanese bombed Hawaii and the United States entered World War II. And so there was a cloud hanging over all of us at that time, and it was just a question. It wasn't a question of whether you were going into the armed services, it was only a question of when. And this made studying rather difficult, because if you think you're going to be yanked out of school in the middle of the term, why, somehow you don't put the intense effort into your studying that you should.
Well, surely you didn't falter on your academic success at that time.
Well, as a matter of fact, I did, because I was in the advanced ROTC program, and I knew that we were going to be called up. And so when the word came out, would come out, that we were going to be called out in the middle of the semester while we all quit studying and just enjoyed ourselves. So the result was that my grades went down appreciably in the last two semesters that I was there.
How long were you at the University of Maryland?
I was there for a total of 2 years, a little less than 2 years, before I went into the Army.
How long were you in the Army?
I was in the Army for 3 years. So I went in in June of 43 and got out in about June of 46.
What were your assignments or responsibilities while you were in the Army? It connected with your engineering interest?
Not at all. Or any interest in language or music either, for that matter. No, I went in and took basic training in the chemical warfare service and then went on to officer candidate school, since I'd been in the advanced ROTC program. And then I joined a 4.2-inch mortar battalion as a second lieutenant. And almost right away, we shipped over to Europe in the fall of 1944.
And you were actually a gun-carrying soldier during the time in Europe?
Well, yeah, I had a carbine.
Yeah. And,
but I was in charge of the fire direction center for the whole company of 4.2-inch mortars.
The war over before you were discharged from the Army. What were you doing during that interim period?
Well, they had a rule at that time that when the war ended in August of 45, they had a system of points where you got a certain number of points for various types of service, and they let the people out right away who had above a certain number of points, and then they went down to the people who had fewer numbers of points. So I didn't have enough points to get out right away, and I had to stay in for another, I think it was until May the following year.
You were in the occupation forces overseas then?
Well, I was in the occupation forces in Germany from VE Day until about sometime in perhaps June. And then we came back to the States, and we were at Fort Jackson, South Carolina.
Did you find that your self-taught German from earlier years was handy while you were in Germany?
Absolutely. I was the only officer in the company who knew both French and German, so I got pressed into service on numerous occasions in France and Belgium and Germany to act as an interpreter, even though my language knowledge at that time was not really adequate to function in that capacity.
But I'm sure that it was enhanced by the necessity of responding to those assignments.
Absolutely. I had somehow had the foresight to take along a pocket dictionary for both French and German, and I just about wore those pocket dictionaries out
when you were discharged in 46, what were your plans then?
Well, I knew I wanted to go back to college, but I felt that I needed a little bit of time to review what I had learned before I was in the Army. So I spent about 4 months in a biochemistry lab in the Department of Agriculture, a government laboratory in Washington. And that gave me a chance to do some laboratory chemistry work and get familiar with some kinds of chemistry that I didn't know before. I ran Keldols and a number of other routine measurements for the guys who were in charge of this laboratory. And then on the bus going back and forth, I studied some more German and reviewed differential equations and also reviewed some of the chemical engineering and chemistry topics.
Did you ever have thoughts of changing from chemical engineering at that point, since it had been more or less directed on you by your father?
No, at that point I was still quite definitely dedicated to chemical engineering.
Well, after doing this period of working in the laboratory and you're reviewing on the bus and otherwise, when did you resume your formal studies?
In September of 1946.
And where was that?
University of Illinois in Urbana.
How did you happen to make the choice to switch from your former school at Maryland to go to Illinois?
This is an extremely complicated story, but when I left Maryland, I had finished 5 semesters. When I was in the Army, I was sent back to Maryland for 1 semester on the ASTP program, and I took the 7th semester at that time. So after the war was over, I went to see the chairman of the Chem Engineering Department in Maryland, and he said, well, you're lacking the 6th semester and the 8th semester, so you'll have to come 2 years in a row in the spring. And I said, well, can't we make some sort of a deal where I can finish up in 1 year? And he said, no. So I started shopping around and found that there were plenty of schools who would be willing to have me come and finish up in 1 year, and Illinois was one of them. And I sort of wanted to come back to the Midwest.
Well, you did return to college at Illinois, and you graduated, and what then?
Well, then I had to... Well, I knew I wanted to go on to grad school because I had lived at the Alpha Chi Sigma house at Urbana, and at that time there were 40 grad students living there and 4 undergraduates. So I saw how much fun these grad students were having, and I decided that was for me. And I had also decided pretty much that I didn't want to continue in chemical engineering because in talking to the chem engineering grad students, it seemed to me that there wasn't enough novel in the graduate program at that time. It just seemed like it was more of the same sort of stuff we'd had as undergraduates. And so I started shopping around, and I had to make a decision between organic chemistry and physical chemistry because I liked both of these subjects very much. And one of the fellows living in the Alpha Chi Sigma house was Ed DeButts, D-E-B-U-T-T-S. And Ed had known Joe Hirschfelder during the war, and Ed himself was a physical chemistry major, and I liked him very much. And he said, oh, you ought to go to Wisconsin and study with Joe Hirschfelder. And my organic chemistry teacher there had been Bob Frank, and he had gotten his Ph.D. degree up here with Homer Adkins in organic chemistry, and he also was pushing me towards Wisconsin. So I came up here and took a look around and fell in love with the place, and so there was no, I didn't even apply anywhere else. I just applied to the one school.
When you entered at University of Wisconsin, did you have financial support, such as an assistantship or scholarship or something?
Oh, yes. I had a WARF fellowship. That's Wisconsin Alumni Research Foundation.
Did that require any particular duties of you other than just scholarly achievement?
It was for doing research with any professor that I chose to work with. So I interviewed around here. I talked to Farrington Daniels and Bob Alberti and Jack Williams, Joe Hirschfelder, and several of the other physical chemistry professors, and I decided that Joe was the most exciting one.
And when did you actually begin your research with him?
The first week. He put me to work immediately. He was a very hard taskmaster. We had to be in his institute every day of the week, including all day Saturday. And Joe was one of these people who went around and talked to each of his graduate students every day, and to see what we were doing, see whether we were experiencing any problems and so forth. He was an extremely diligent mentor.
What research did you undertake that first year?
Well, he put me to work along with another one of the students, Ellen Spotz, S-P-O-T-Z, and he put the two of us together on a problem of the calculation of the transport properties of dilute gases. In other words, the viscosity, thermal conductivity, diffusion, and thermal diffusion. And we were to make calculations of these properties using a reasonable intermolecular force law.
In those days, the calculations were a time-consuming, tedious operation compared to what they would be today with computers, wasn't it?
Absolutely. What took us a year or so to do could probably be done today in a week or less. But at that time, all we had was the Marchant and Monroe calculators. These were electromechanical devices that they cost about $1,000 a piece, mm-hmm. but all they could do was add, subtract, multiply, and divide.
Did you make any change in the research problem during your graduate study with Hirschfelder?
Oh, yes. I went on and worked on some other problems after that. Well, we continued some of this work into the second year, and then the third year I started to work on equation of state, the so-called virial equation of state, and it was my job to calculate the third virial coefficient using the Leonard-Jones 612 potential.
And you were successful at doing that, I presume?
Well, I was successful at doing this, except just at the time I finished, I found out that a professor in Japan during World War II had made the same calculations, and he had done all of his calculations on a on an abacus. However, my calculations were somewhat more complete, so that saved the day.
Was that the principal focus of your dissertation then?
Yes, the third virial coefficient. I'm sorry, I misspoke on that. The Japanese work duplicated the work that I had done earlier with Ellen Spotz. The third virial coefficient, I found out about the time I was ready to finish, that had been duplicated in Holland by Jan van Kranendonk and Jan de Boer, his professor. And also there was another group that had calculated the third virial coefficient, but my work was much more extensive and much more accurate than theirs had been.
And that completed your dissertation work,
yes.
And you received your PhD from Wisconsin. And what did you do with it?
Well, during the time I had been a grad student with Hirschfelder, I had had a chance to meet many of the big wheels in the field of theoretical physical chemistry, because Joe Hirschfelder himself was a very well-known person, and so he was always inviting people to come here as visitors. And one of the visitors that I had met was Jack Kirkwood, who at that time was at Caltech. And another one that I met was Jan de Boer of the University of Amsterdam in the Netherlands. And I was quite impressed with both of these people, and both of them offered, well, Kirkwood offered me a fellowship, and I was able to get a Fulbright grant to go to Holland at the same time. So it was a difficult decision to make, because both of these gentlemen were absolutely outstanding in their field. However, the chance to go to Europe and study another foreign language was more than I could resist, and so I went to Holland to study with Jan de Boer.
Had you developed any facility with Dutch language before that time?
I started studying before I applied for the Fulbright grant. I got some books out of the library and just started to study by myself. Then later on I got a record course, and then after I was sure I had the grant, I hired a teacher, Hans Weinberg, whom you may know. He's an organic chemist at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands, just retired there recently. And Hans was my teacher for the summer, during the summer term before I
left. He was here at Wisconsin?
Yes, he was a graduate student also. And he was a terrific teacher. And I got a lot out of those private lessons.
So you had a good facility with Dutch language when you went to Amsterdam.
It was still rather halting, but I could certainly read things okay. And after I'd been there for several months, well, my conversational ability improved at a rapid rate.
You must have a real gift for language.
I wouldn't say it's a gift, it's a sickness.
How long were you in Amsterdam?
For 1 year.
And what was the nature of your work there?
Well, I was working at the Institute for Theoretical Physics, and I worked on two projects there. One was infrared absorption in homonuclear diatomic molecules, and then I did another project on quantum deviations of transport phenomena of gases at low density.
And when you completed that year of postdoctoral work in Amsterdam, you returned to the United States?
Yes, I came back to the University of Wisconsin because during the summer before I went to Holland, Joe Hirschfelder had decided that he wanted to write a book, and that later became Molecular Theory of Gases and Liquids. And so he asked Chuck Curtis, who had been one of his graduate students, and myself, and Ellen Spots to work on this book with him. And so we started to work on that in the summer before I went to Holland. While I was in Holland, I wrote two chapters over there with Jan de Boer, the director of the Institute for Theoretical Physics. So when I came back over here, while I was over there, well, the other three were here writing chapters of the book. And when I came back, well, we had one more year where we completely reorganized the material, changed a lot of the notation, and then prepared the final manuscript.
What was the source of financial support during that time you were writing the book?
Joe Hirschfelder had a grant from the Navy, and I was supported on that.
The Navy was supporting the writing of the textbook, or the grant was for other purposes of research?
The details of that I don't know. How Joe managed this is beyond me, but he that was his responsibility.
Yes. I just spent the year after your European postdoc,
yes,
working on the book as,
yes,
a co-author.
Yes.
The book was completed by the end of that year?
The major part of the manuscript was completed by the end of that year.
What did you do following that writing?
Well, I got in my car and with my few belongings and drove off to Ithaca, New York to be on the faculty of the chemistry department at Cornell.
You had gotten an offer from them in the meanwhile.
Yes, I had offers from Berkeley, Colorado, Texas, and Cornell. And I decided to take the one at Cornell.
Do you remember what particularly influenced your choice among those different prestigious institutions?
Well, I think the quality of Cornell influenced me. I thought Berkeley was a bit too far away. And also at Berkeley they wanted me to teach freshman chemistry. And at Cornell I was told I would be teaching physical chemistry. But unfortunately during the summer one of the faculty members in analytical chemistry, I guess, had passed away, so I got shoved into analytical chemistry. I've forgotten the details of that, but in any case, I ended up teaching quantitative analysis, which was a subject I didn't like at all.
Well, you probably were able to bring some unexpected physical chemistry perspectives into the teaching of quantitative analysis.
Perhaps so, but I think the biggest thing that helped me there was Don Cook. Don Cook had joined the faculty there a year or two before, and he was an analytical chemist. And he very generously offered to help me get started in reading the right books and getting the right perspectives on the subject. And he was so enthusiastic about analytical chemistry and so kindly to me that I ended up actually enjoying teaching analytical chemistry. And I learned a great deal, mainly because of Don Cook.
Did you ever have to teach analytical chemistry again?
I taught it the second semester that I was there. And so I just taught for two terms at Cornell.
And then you were teaching physical chemistry all the time after that? While you were at Cornell?
Well, I was only there for two semesters.
All right. Yeah. So you were at Cornell for two semesters.
That's right.
And then what happened?
Well, a very strange thing happened on April Fool's Day of 1953. I got a telegram from Olaf Haugen, who was at that time the chairman of chemical engineering at Wisconsin, inviting me to come to Wisconsin at a to join the faculty here. And since it came on the 1st of April, and since someone had played a terrible New Year, April Fool's joke on me the year before, I thought this was another April Fool's joke. And so I didn't answer the telegram.
Did you think that it was one of your colleagues at Cornell that was playing the joke on you?
Oh, no. I suspected somebody here at Wisconsin who had pulled a joke on me the previous year.
I see.
So I didn't answer the telegram. I thought, well, I'm not going to fall for it this time. And then about 10 days later, I suppose, Joe Hirschfelder called me up and said, well, aren't you going to answer Olaf's telegram? And I thought for a moment, I thought, oh, was that for real? And he said, yes, of course it was for real. What did you think? So I told him I thought this was an extension of the joke that had been played on me the year before.
He knew about the previous joke?
Oh, I think he did, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So after he assured you that it was for real, then you responded to the talk.
I responded right away, yes, because I realized I'd been quite rude.
Yeah. Well, did you have any questions about whether to make the move from Cornell or were you immediately ready to come back to Wisconsin?
I was in a terrible dither. So I came out here for a weekend, for a few days to look around, and Olaf Haugen gave me a sales talk and led me to believe that probably I would sort of succeed him with a specialty in thermodynamics and statistical mechanics. He realized that thermal was moving in a more molecular direction, more or less the direction in which John Krausmann at Berkeley finally went. And so he wanted me to work in that area. And I found that a very attractive thing, because then I...